Good afternoon, members. I'd like to call to order the Water Quality Supply and Treatment Subcommittee. Missy, will you please call the roll?
Chair Stevenson?
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Here.
Ranking Member Hart?
Here.
Representative Altman?
Here.
Representative Basabe?
Here.
Representative Bell is excused. Representative Brackett?
Here.
Representative Cassell?
Here.
Representative Cross?
Here.
Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Gonzalez Pittman?
Present.
Representative Gossett Seidman?
Here.
Representative Henson?
Here.
Representative Overdorf? Representative Redondo?
Here.
Representative Temple? Representative Waldron?
Here.
Representative Yeager?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. We have a quorum. Let the record show that a quorum is present. Members, before we begin, I'll give you the routine reminder on electronic devices to have them turned off or placed on silent mode. Good afternoon, members. On today's agenda, we have two proposed committee bills for members' bills and a proposed committee bill that would reform stormwater rules adopted by DEP as required in the Clean Waters Act, which we passed in 2020. First up, we have proposed committee substitute for House Bill 165 by our own Representative Gossett Seidman and Representative Cross. The title of the bill is Sampling of Beach Water and Public Bathing Spaces. I'll give them a minute to get down to the podium because they both have worked really hard on this bill. Representatives Cross and Gossett Seidman, you are recognized to explain the PCS for House Bill 165.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Yes, this bill is entitled Safe Waterways Act with a CS for an overwhelming reason, because it's not always understood in our state that our agencies, municipalities, and counties are all involved in keeping our beaches and waters safe. Communication is lacking, however. When a contamination of waterway occurs, there are lapses in reporting and informing agencies and the public. There are also delays in testing water and posting signs due to this. Often persons, especially at the local level, are uncertain how to proceed or whom to call. This bill clarifies the responsibilities and mandates or requires DOH to issue notices within 24 hours of the quality of waterways being contaminated that they are made aware. It also requires counties and municipalities to notify DOH and post signage within 24 hours of the waterways being contaminated. DEP and FWC are also required to post signage on waters owned by the state. And lastly, it requires public boat docks, marinas, and piers to report to the municipality or county any issues that impacts water quality nearby them. Rep.
Thank you, committee. Chair Stevenson, this is a really important bill. Besides nutrients, fecal bacteria is the number one contaminant of our waters around the state. There are currently 113 TMDLs listed on DEP's website for fecal bacteria, and swimming in areas that have high counts of E. coli or Enterococcus can cause gastrointestinal illness, respiratory illnesses, skin rashes, irritation of the eyes and nose, and it's particularly problematic in our children. This bill really is about accountability to the public and notifying them in a timely manner, making sure that we have the monitoring around the state that is adequate to ensure that when you and your family go out to the beach, you know that it's safe to swim.
Thank you, Rep.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions of the sponsors? Representative Waldron, you're recognized.
Thank you. I think this is a great bill. Two questions.
Correct.
The first one is, the signage is going to be similar to like the riptide alerts that are put up on the beaches, and it'll say swim at your own risk to prevent liability issues.
You're recognized.
Yes and no. Not quite. There is signage already being utilized by DOH, and that can be copied or perhaps more abundantly available to counties and municipalities. I can provide an example afterwards if needed. Thank you.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. My second question is, will there be provisions for collecting the data around all the beaches and the number of times there's the fecal matter and such is so high?
You're recognized.
Yes, due to the fact that this bill has been pared down from its original disposition, there will be forthcoming some exact measurements to do that. Currently, DOH, DEP, and FWC work together. We're trying to close the gap between any kind of reportage and timeliness of reporting, and also holding the munis and counties accountable to report their spills.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, ladies, for bringing this very important bill. In the bill, does it stipulate the amount of time between when they find out that there's been contamination and they notify the public?
Yes, we're seeking a 24-hour noticing as opposed to days due to other situations.
I see no other questions of the sponsor. There are, Representative Henson, I apologize, you're recognized.
Thank you. You said you would provide samples of signage, but will the signage say no swimming or waters? Can you just give me an example of what it might say? Swim at your own risk, something?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. So that will be part of the rulemaking undertaken by the Department of Health, is to have consistent signage, a consistent size for the signs, so it is visible to people at common points of entry at the beach or these other public bathing areas, so they will know their risk. This could coincide with a closure if the levels of fecal contamination are high enough.
So it will be clear, it will be clear to people that they should not swim. Okay, that's, as long as it's clear to the public, that's great. Okay. I see no other questions. There are no amendments to the bill. Is there public testimony on the bill? There is. First, we have Terry Gibson, Deploy US.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Subcommittee. Thank you for your time. I'd really like to thank the bill sponsors and co-sponsors for your tenacity on this bill. It has a long history, like dating back to 1999. Again, my name is Terry Gibson. I represent Deploy US, but I'm a lifelong surfer, angler, and diver. I grew up in West Palm Beach, Florida. I live in Martin County. The same pipe that inspired Representative Gossett-Sibon to introduce this bill has made generations of surfers like me sick. Breaks all the time. It's not alone. There's plenty of pipes that do that. The battle to get adequate wastewater testing, like I said, dates back to the 90s when I worked for Surfer Magazine. As a rookie editor for Surfer Magazine, I got flown to D.C. to testify about how many times we'd been sick, had gotten pink eye and everything else from these issues. And we got the Beach Act passed, which is the federal legislation that provides for the cost share of the state to do this testing. The state kind of begrudgingly does it sometimes, not very well, sort of, when it's not controversial. It's been better and worse through the years. Depends on who was in office. But back then, you know, the cruise ships were dumping in state waters. The septic tanks were becoming an increasing problem as things we didn't know like sea level rise were happening. The sewage spills were going on everywhere. And and of course, the sewage outfalls were billowing on the reef. And back then, we found a white knight and then Senate President Ken Pruitt and several members of the House, and they took up on the cruise ships, and we won, a bunch of surfers. They have to pump out. We got the sewage outfalls closed, sort of, by a date certain. Two of them were closed. There's a couple more that need to be closed, like tomorrow. But we didn't make any progress on the sewage spills or the septic tanks, which is too politically difficult. Fast forward to about 2018, 2019, this body, well, not this particular subcommittee exists in, but the legislature, many of you who were here then, began to take these issues very seriously, and we got the Clean Waterways Act and the Environmental Accountability Act done, and big buckets of money to go do things with. And for example, I was fishing in Titusville a couple weeks ago, and I saw the Titusville plant being actually worked on for the first time in 20 years complaining about it, and all the septic sewers going on, and I saw seagrass, and I saw bluebill ducks, and I saw redfish. I caught redfish. It's working. But it's going to take a long time to get all these septic tanks out, to get all these, I mean, thank God you all set deadlines. Really appreciate that. But it's going to take a while. In the meantime, the sewage is going to continue to flow. And people like me need to know where and when we can't swim, because we can't see this stuff in the water. Very rarely can we. So this bill, although it's not as strong as I'd like it to be in this posture, it's still very good and it's a bold step forward. So I encourage you all to pass it and refer it on. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. I don't see any questions. I appreciate that you're keeping an eye on things, and water is a long-term project. Thank you. John Sarius, Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends, waves in support. Kimberly Dinkins, 1,000 Friends of Florida, waves in support. Members, is there any debate on the bill? Representative Basabi, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you both for proposing this bill. I just wanted to share an experience I had. Last session, I put in a wastewater management grant bill that was absorbed into the DEP package at $200 million. This grant program has been funded. And I later learned that, and I'm in Miami-Dade County, a lot of my municipalities don't qualify for this grant. So the money is going there. But I think what's great about what your bill does, as terrified as I am to see how many red X's are going to be in so many areas of our beautiful waterways that are just polluted at this point, it's going to put a lot of the people responsible that should be accountable for how they are managing their budgets, and that making sure that money is going to where it's supposed to be going, and addressing these issues so that we don't have to face this. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises in the future. And thank you again for the bill.
Well, I want to thank you. I know that this has been hard, and now I know just how long it's been around, thanks to Mr. Gibson's testimony. You are recognized. We did debate. Okay. You are recognized. Beg your pardon. Oh, we do have a question. Wait, we were past questions. Oh, you want a debate on the bill. Sorry. You're recognized for debate on the bill. I apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll do whatever you... it's good to do. Thank you so much. I've actually filed a bill in the past, and it's good to see it moving forward, because we do know that water is our biggest tourist attraction in Florida, as well as our marine life, our underwater marine life. And I think one of our bills last session was about red tide mitigation. All of these things are affected by the nutrients that's in our water. It's good to see you bring it this far, and I'm happy to see it moving forward. Thank you so much.
Excellent points, Representative Henson. Didn't miss anybody else. Okay. Representative Gossett-Seidman and Representative Cross, however you want to do it, you are recognized to close on PCS for House Bill 165.
Well, thank you. Thank you again for those who have been supporting this bill. I want to first also thank Jean for all of your help in working on this bill. You know, it's never fun to get bad news. If you show up at the beach and there's a red X there that says this is unsafe, that's a bummer. But even worse is being lied to, or knowing that your local governments, your state government, is not taking the steps to protect you and your family. So this is really about accountability and making sure that we are giving the information to people to keep them safe and healthy.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. This bill is very important. I've been diving my county reefs for almost 40 years. We came down here as kids with our families and vacationed in Palm Beach County. And those reefs are not the same as they were when I was a kid. They're coming back. It will take a long, slow process, but I am here to say that we need to do this now, and I appreciate this committee. I will tell you that I know firsthand what the contaminated water is, because last summer I jumped into it off our boat unknowingly. There was a sewer break on July 3rd, and it wasn't reported until July 6th or 7th, depending on who says. And I went up to to the Lake Worth Lagoon to look into these appropriations I got to rebuild islands and mangroves and fish populations. And on the way back, it was very hot, 95 degrees. I jumped in and I got back on the boat and I said to my husband and my best friend, who's a nurse, gee, it looks like pea soup. I don't know what's going on. and there were all these little things floating. And I thought, well, a landscaper blew it into the water, and it turned out it was toilet paper. I found out another half mile south because there the break was. So I looked into it, I called the agencies, and it was reported in a news station 3 days later, and then I called the newspapers myself and said, please run this, and they did. So this is an important thing. On that day, on July 4th, there were hundreds and thousands of people in the boats on kayaks, canoes, and at the beach. And so I hate to say that I jumped in, but I did, and I'm here to stay until we get the waters cleaned up. I think we can do it. This puts everyone on notice at every level that we need to band together. It is good for tourism because they need to know their waters are safe when they come here. I don't want to hear it's bad for tourism. It is not. It is keeping our tourists and our residents and our kids safe. And with that, I close, and I appreciate everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Missy, will you please call the roll for PCS for House Bill 165?
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Basabe?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cross? Dunkley?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Hinson?
Yes.
Baggard?
Yes.
Overdorff?
Yes, ma'am.
Redondo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yeager?
Yes.
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
17 yeas.
Members, by your vote, will show the bill reported favorably without amendments. Congratulations, Representatives Cross and Seidman.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next up, we have PCS for House Bill 1073, Mitigation, by Representative Trunow. Representative Trunow, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and members of this committee. Today we have PCS for HB 1073. Does the following: allows local government to contract with a private sector entity to permit and operate a wetland mitigation bank on public lands, again, only when state or federal mitigation credits are not available. Also provides that mitigation banks authorized under the bill must be sponsored by a private sector entity that pays a usage fee to the government reflecting the market value of the public land determined through an established competitive procurement process. Part two of the bill: in 2022, the legislature passed HB 965, which provides the establishment of water quality enhancement areas and the sale of water quality credits only to public sector entities. This bill today would also allow private sector to purchase the same credits that are currently available only for the private sector under the same requirements and constraints in the existing legislation. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Trunow. Are there any amendments? Nope. Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Orvendorf.
Okay. Rep, thanks so much for the bill. Just a couple of questions for you, if that's okay. When we're looking at the water quality enhancement areas, and specifically looking at the water quality trading side of it, I understand that is also going toward from a private entity to a governmental agency. Is that correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I don't understand the question exactly on the water quality enhancement areas.
You're recognized.
So in setting up the water quality enhancement areas and actually creating the water quality credits themselves, is that exclusively to a governmental agency only? In other words, at this point in time, there's nothing that's going to a private entity as far as the credits would not be sold to a private entity in any way, shape, or form. They're only going to a governmental agency for a water quality enhancement area?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. So the bill that was passed in 2022 is what you said, only for public entities, but this bill would allow the purchase from private entities to accomplish the same thing with the development, or, you know, the stormwater rule that we look at today will allow them to have this in a toolbox to accomplish those goals.
Thank you.
Any other questions for members? Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chernow, can you estimate how many parts of the state, how many basins this is required in, where we don't have mitigation credits through the private market already?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. They're limited in scope as far as, you know, the first part of this bill where they're limited in the credits available. But the bill only allows the process to work where there is limitations.
You have a follow-up question? You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And would this be available for both freshwater and saltwater wetland credits?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think it distinguishes between the two, as I read it.
Follow-up? Any other Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chernow, can you explain to me why we need this bill, the purpose of the bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question. The purpose of the bill is to provide more tools in the toolbox to achieve the goals that the legislature has put forth. If you look back to 2019 and HB 521, local governments were allowed permit responsible mitigation on a project by project basis. This expands that, right? And then we look at SB 712, the Florida Clean Waters Act. We're moving into rulemaking today. You guys will hear it in just a few minutes. This tool will allow the expansion of those projects getting done.
Follow up. Representative Henson.
I may not understand the purpose of the bill yet. So we're creating a credit system to mitigate building?
You're recognized.
Not exactly.
Any more questions from the committee? All right, seeing none. Is there any public testimony? Yes, we do. Let's see here. We have Aston Mears, Florida Home Builders Association. Waves in opposition. No, waves in support. Thank you. Almost went wrong. Lance Pierce, AFCO, yep, waves in support. Any other public testimony? All right, seeing none, members, we are now in debate. Any debate? Representative Overdorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Chernow, thank you for this great bill. It certainly does provide some tools in the toolbox. Allows for compliance, allows for flexibility. I really think that this is something that we'll be looking back, and when you look at also with House Bill 1379 and the requirements for local government to achieve TMDLs and to actually hit their requirements for basin management action plans, this will certainly help with that whole situation. That combined with the stormwater bill we're going to hear here in a couple minutes, I think this is gives a great opportunity to actually achieve clean water and to do it with public-private partnerships across the board. So I applaud you for this bill. I think it's a great opportunity and a great step forward. And thank you again. We'll be certainly up on this bill today.
Thank you. Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to vote for this bill today. I don't love it. And the reason why I don't is because we have historically underinvested in conservation in our public spaces. I know that this is limited to local governments. If this was state lands, I would be voting against it because I don't think that we put enough in creating new conservation areas, whether it's in public ownership or conservation easements. And so what this is doing is it's taking land that we already have in public ownership, putting mitigation banks on there, The UMAM process will require that there is some type of lift that we get. So if we have degraded or not high quality public lands, then with these mitigation banks, hopefully we'll be able to get higher performing ecosystems and some benefits to wildlife and to water quality as a result of it. But I do wonder what's going to happen when we run out of these public lands. We don't have any private mitigation banks. We don't have public lands. We've already exhausted all of our sources because we haven't been proactive and had the growth management and, you know, and smart planning tools to align with that as well. So I am going to vote for this bill, but I think this should be in concert with more conservation across the board.
Any other members in debate? Seeing none, Representative Trunow, you're welcome to close.
Thank you, Chair and members. This bill does a couple of things that are really important. And those municipalities that may have limited or constrained access to property to cause the need to solve some of the problems. So, yeah, it's definitely the tool we need, because if they don't have these opportunities, they can't solve their problem with the funds that they have. So it's a good bill. I appreciate all your support. With that, I close.
Thank you, Representative Missy. Will you please call the roll?
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Misabe? Yes. Brackett?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman? Hart?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Redondo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yeager?
Yes.
Stevenson? Chair Maggard?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
By your votes, the bill reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Trunow. Members, we will now see proposed committee bill WST24-01, Stormwater Rules, presented by Representative Altman. Representative Altman, you are recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know I don't need to tell this committee how important water is. It's Florida's way of life. A clean and abundant supply of water is inextricably linked to our quality of life here in the state. And this legislature, working with our governor, has approved an unprecedented amount of funding to protect Florida's natural resources. Since 2019, nearly $2.4 billion in state funding has been appropriated for targeted water quality improvements alone. This record funding has been coupled with the passing of sweeping policy changes to ensure that the investments we are making can now improve our environment for generations to come. And some of the most impactful environmental policy changes in our state's history followed the passage of Senate Bill 712. And that is what brings us here. That's Florida's Clean Waterways Act. That act in and of itself achieve little, but what makes it achieve a lot is the rulemaking authority by which we gave to the regulatory agencies to implement that bill. So in effect, we're here at the precipice of making that bill a reality by approving the rules that have been promulgated by the Department of Environmental Protection. The act that allows for rulemaking requires that this legislature approves the estimated regulatory cost that's prepared by the DEP. That's why that this bill is here before us. For nearly 3 years, the State Department of Environmental Protection has been actively engaged in the rulemaking process that's brought us here today. And the main emphasis in these stormwater rules has focused on increasing the removal of nutrients. Nutrients are the death knell that's polluting our waterways and creating most of the problems that we have here in Florida. As a result of that rulemaking process and those 3 years of work, the department effort at the DEP has opened approximately 200 rules, and today we're seeking approval of the stormwater rules. Stormwater, as I mentioned, is a major pollutant to our waterways, And historically, stormwater management systems were believed to achieve at least 80% reduction of pollutants, including nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus. But new science has shown that this is not the case. Way back in 2007, the DEP conducted a study that showed over 80% of the counties have nutrient overloads in their water bodies, 87%. It's heartbreaking to think that these retention systems are not working properly, but they are not. As a person who's worked in the field and built many of these stormwater retention areas, and as you look out and you see the massive development we've had in our state, and you see these retention areas that provide many important, not only removing nutrients, but open space, recreation. Heck, my son's first large bass was caught on one of these stormwater retention ponds in the community we live. They provide a lot of memories, a lot of aesthetics. They're important to us. But we need to do a better job. They are not working to the degree. And we need to also take advantage of new science. And this is what these rules do. It takes us that next step further, and it really takes a look at the science so we can do a job better and to ensure all future development. This doesn't have any effect on what's been developed in the past, but this moves us forward from this point to make sure that these new projects have adequate stormwater retention, stormwater treatment capabilities. And that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Altman. Are there questions of the representative? Ranking Member Hart.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Rep, I was just wondering, even, I'm unclear whether or not the updates to the rules will be efficient enough to affect the water quality to meet the goals of the Clean Water Act. Are you believe that this will be sufficient to do that?
You're recognized.
I believe so. I mean, DEP is charged with the task of implementation of the Florida 2020 legislation. And that's quite, the Florida's Clean Waterways Act was quite aggressive. And it was their job to implement that and create the rules necessary to make that happen. And I think they've done that. I think they've done a good job of getting us to this point after many years of work. And now it's in our hands.
Follow-up. Representative Overdorf.
I have some questions for Representative Altman, but also was wondering if there's an opportunity to be able to ask DEP some of the same questions, or if that's possible.
Yes, I agree, because I have the same questions, or some questions.
So, Representative Altman, I was going to ask about conceptual permits and some of the things along those lines. Wasn't sure if you'd feel comfortable answering that, or if I should wait for the DEP representatives to come up a little bit later.
Well, as I mentioned, there's 200 rules. It's over 3 years of time. Probably would be more productive to have them hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
Thank you, and thank you again for talking with me last night as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative. Representative from DEP, please. Representative Overdorf.
Thank you. Thanks for meeting with me earlier. Just wanted to kind of reiterate kind of some of the things we talked about. First of all, with conceptual permits, such as those covering areas like the Villages or Top of the World or Tradition in my neck of the wood, these are obviously all-encompassing permits. Could you please comment on the applicability of a conceptual permit as it relates to then the implementation of the stormwater rule?
You're recognized. Could you please state your name?
Absolutely. My name is Jess Kramer. I'm Deputy Secretary for Regulatory Programs at DEP. And I'm happy to comment on that, Representative. So all conceptual permits that are issued prior to the effective date of the stormwater rule and all future phases that would come under those conceptual permits would be governed by the stormwater rules that are in place today.
Follow up?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Please.
In looking at approval and that type of issue, whether it be a regular permit or a conceptual, if a application was deemed to be complete prior to the time that this rule goes into effect, how would you deal with an application that is deemed complete?
You're recognized.
So let me separate this into two categories,
Thank
if
you.
That's okay. So there's the conceptual permit issue, which those would have to be conceptual permits that are issued prior to the effective date. When it comes to the kind of the other body of permit applications and kind of the year glide path, if you will, for when the rule becomes effective, all permit applications that are deemed complete within the first 12 months after the effective date of the rule, those would also be governed under the current stormwater rules, and the new rules would not be applicable to those. So it's two different categories.
Follow-up?
And just for the edification more of those that are watching and listening, to be deemed complete literally means that the entire application not just has been filled out and submitted on the day that that may happen, but that, in fact, staff has reviewed it, you've gone through a 30-day review period, and that, in fact, the agency has now said that is a completed permit and now under review. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. I just would want to get back on the 30-day review process, but yeah, it is that all permit, all application materials needed to be deemed complete have been received by the department.
Thank you.
Ranking Member Hart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, do we know what physical impact, financial impact this is going to have on our local governments?
You're recognized.
If any.
Let me just double check. You're asking about fiscal impacts on local governments, correct? Okay. So let me unpack that just a little bit.
Okay.
So when it comes to the costs that would be borne, it would be borne by applicants who would need to have a stormwater permit or a stormwater management system based on development that they're doing, construction they're doing. And so when we did a fiscal analysis, to be frank, we didn't separate out by categories of applicants. And so our body of our cost analysis encompasses anybody who would fall into the category of a permit applicant. However, when it comes to operations and maintenance, those would also be borne by the folks who, for example, if you have a development, operations and maintenance would be pulled together in a plan. That's one of the features of our bill that we're really really proud of, and we think it's a really good step forward, is that the folks who would undertake the permit application and actually construct the stormwater management system would then have to come up with an operations and maintenance plan that would project what do you need to do to upkeep the system itself, how much is that going to cost, and then that plan would be handed over, say, to an HOA to continue to implement it. And so, again, a little bit hard to really break down into different categories of applicants, but I hope that gets a little bit at what you were asking.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'm just concerned about the local governments that may operate stormwater treatment facilities. Will there be some type of additional expense to them?
You're recognized.
Absolutely. And on this, because what I'd like to do is I'd like to have John Coates, our director of the Division of Water, come up to talk about MS4 specifically, which will get at your question.
Thank you, and please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Coates, I'm the director for the Division of Water Resource Management of the department. And as Deputy Secretary Kramer was discussing, so if a permanent applicant is indeed a municipality or somebody who has an MS4 program, which is a municipal separate stormwater permitting program for municipalities and other entities. So if they are building that new stormwater system, they would also have to make sure that they were meeting the same performance requirements that any other entity would have to do. So they would have either, you know, designing the system, take advantage of some of the opportunities or some of the additional costs that may be involved in that would be there. Specifically for the MS4 entities, we have a streamlined provision in the rule that they're already doing reporting to the department, you know, under the MS4 regulatory program. And so, for example, there's one area there where they would not have to do separate reporting and inspections under these requirements. So it's an effort to, in the process of coming up with regulations that will move the stormwater protections forward, it's also an opportunity there to streamline. The MS4s are also the same entities that often have to help with reductions generally for BMAPs and other areas, and so the MS4s, I think, also are wanting to make sure that, you know, the additional work is done to protect waterways and that stormwater systems are indeed performing efficiently.
Follow-up? Nope. Any other questions? Representative Overdorf.
Just coming back, guys. Thank you so much. When we talked earlier, I also brought up the concerns from some folks about soil types, and that this particular rule is going to apply from Pensacola to Miami. And obviously, there's a lot of different soil types within those areas. Could you assuage some of the concerns that are associated with that, possibly talk about BMP, rural development, some different things there, and how you're taking into account those different soil types from all those different regions with one rule?
You're recognized.
Absolutely. So I think what's important is exactly to your point, Representative, this rule is applicable across the state. There are not carve-outs or specific provisions that apply to one area of the state versus another. How we get at addressing those differences that come up based on the geography of the state is through the allowance of flexible uses of best management practices. And so to the point we were talking about earlier, in a location where maybe a wet detention pond wouldn't work because you have a high water table, this rule allows the flexibility for the use of additional BMPs that traditionally, when I say traditionally, I mean under the current framework of the rule, an applicant wouldn't otherwise get credit for in terms of providing stormwater management treatment. And so it will be a little bit of I don't want to say a puzzle, but it'll be a little bit of on the applicant, depending on where you are in the state, looking at the different types of systems that will be effective based on where you are and the factors that come into play with things like soil types, depending on where you are in the state. But not only does this rule allow for flexibilities in use of existing best management practices, it also allows for the continued growth of the body of best management practices that would be available for folks to use to get credit for to achieve their minimum performance standards that they have to achieve.
Follow up. Any other questions? All right, I have some. I guess I recognize myself. Two things concern me with this, and it's time and cost. And I'm really looking at it from small businesses. I understand the developers are always in the conversation and talk, and that's what most people look at. I'm concerned of the cost that we're laying on to the small businesses or everyday citizens who's building something that stormwater's required on. Is there any offsets to help them? You're recognized.
Thank you.
I debate myself.
I think in terms of what I would assume you're thinking of in terms of offsets, kind of the traditional, you get a carve out or something like that. There's nothing specific that applies to small businesses in this. However, again, kind of getting back to the flexibilities in BMPs, some of those things that hopefully would provide more cost effective management strategies, the flexible nature of those. We're hoping helps to reduce some of those costs, as well as kind of that glide path, if you will, of a year for folks to be operating still under the current rule regime to allow folks to kind of plan out for those types of costs.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Because the legislature really, last year, really tried to attack affordable housing, correct? And it seems like we're adding costs to that, and I'm not wanting to do that. Is there anything to help the affordable housing part of this in this stormwater bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I think in terms of that, again, there is no specific offset. There's no specific cost credit that's provided in that way. When we went and we did our analysis, and I know that there are varying thoughts about actual costs, but I think our cost projection had it at about an additional $2,600 per acre on top of what is, I believe, $31,600 per acre currently. And so one of the activities that we undertook in this rulemaking is to kind of hold that cost against how much it costs on the back end to be providing the cleanup that we're providing right now, which is billions. And so while there is no cost credit to reduce that, and I use that term because I think that that's kind of maybe what conceptually what you're thinking of, It is certainly a reduced cost to take care of it on the front end and to build these management systems to new standards versus cleaning it up on the back end.
One more follow-up, Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. We've talked about money a little bit. On to time. If I read this correctly, during the process, this requires a site-specific case-by-case study. Have you calculated how much time you will add to a permit? Because with an inflationary market that we're in, the cost of goods going up, the more the delay, the more the cost goes up. Then I'm back to adding cost to our citizens that are already being attacked by that.
You're recognized.
Absolutely. I think what you're speaking to is the pre versus post development analysis. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn to John here and have him step in for a minute, if that's all right.
Certainly.
Thank you. And Representative Maggard, I think the question, if I understand it correctly, is where the entity is going to go and do that comparison of pre versus post. And that analysis, how much time does that take and was that considered? It absolutely was considered. The process involves doing just basically some loading calculations based on the existing land use category that exists today, and then, of course, looking at what's proposed for the development and what will that land look like, you know, under the proposed development. And so that calculation process is included in the rule, and we also have tried to very clearly put forth that the engineers or the landscape architects, whoever doing the process for the application, can go through and provide either their own calculations or there is a process in the rule that we hope is pretty straightforward. One of the things that will be very important over the next year or so is to go forward and make sure that people are trained at the water management districts and at the department to be able to quickly review those, because we do believe, we agree with you, that time is important for being able to continue to process permitting in this state. And so we are committed to do that, and we do have a process in the rule, and the cost itself, the cost projections, did include those costs.
One follow-up. Thank you.
Representative, you're recognized.
So do you have any kind of guesstimate how much delay time? I know based on what the water management training, but when you start doing site visits and you're doing specific and we're doing that, you're adding time to that. And the idea is that's just costly. So do you have any kind of, because I'm sure when you figured the rule out, there had to be a time you would think it would take to do that.
Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. And so a site-specific may or may not be required for something like that any more than would be today, because we are working with land use categories. There's not a site-specific inspection that has to be done to sample, for example, rainwater running off the during a storm event from the existing site. We had cost estimates that I'd have to go back to in the calculations that were done, you know, well over a year ago, in terms of how much time it would take to review and provide that information. But the rule provided a process that would use representative concentrations for the land use categories as a way to provide a reliable and an expedited process to do a fair evaluation of the existing conditions and compare that to the post-development, you know, what was projected to be there at the site. And so we have taken an approach that we think tries to make that a very cost-effective public process and a permitting process to keep this to be something that didn't have any unnecessary burden.
One last follow-up, one last question.
This is for the fourth last follow-up.
I'm used to talking to my kids. It just keeps on going. Thank you. When we had the workshop some weeks back or months now, time flies here, we talked about grandfathering. It still seemed to be pretty gray to me. When I glanced over this late last night, it didn't look like we changed. I'm a little concerned between what we have today in permits and what things get extended as they roll into the date, what will be grandfathered and what will not be. Because you have the people pay all this process and things happen. And have we changed the grandfathering permit side?
Let me ask a question. Do you mean for agriculture or for housing construction?
Just any ERP permit.
Okay, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the ratification bill includes some clarifications related to grandfathering to try to make sure that what was clear. The grandfathering provisions would apply, as was said earlier, to, you know, any permit that is, you know, effective in existence out of the time the rule is effective. Those applications, those permits that are issued, of course, are grandfathered. It would also cover any effective conceptual permits that have been issued and the subsequent construction phase, individual permits, for example, or general permits would be issued subject to a conceptual permit approval. Those would all be grandfathered. Plus, there is a provision that provides what was referred to, and I think it's a good term, the glide path. So any project that has a completed application within 1 year, 12 months, of the effective date of the rule would also be able to be grandfathered, if you will, if you forgive the use of that term, and would be subject to the rules as they exist today. That provides them an opportunity to complete the project that's already been envisioned, and then, of course, it provides those who will have projects that will be in the future to have more time to plan and modify their designs to be able to, in a cost-effective way, provide the additional stormwater treatment. Thank you.
I think there's one other grandfathering that you expanded, that's been expanded, related to redevelopment. If you could mention that, I'd really appreciate that. I think it's really good because it addresses concerns about existing development areas, and it's a considerable benefit for redevelopment.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So for the case of redevelopment, currently the rule, as was adopted back in April of 2023, the rule would provide a 45%, speaking in terms of total nitrogen reductions, that would be the required minimum performance requirement for total nitrogen removal would be 45%. It excluded in the adopted rule any ability to apply that reduced, that particular performance standard to cases where there are impaired waters. In the cases of redevelopment, those typically are going to be space-constrained, smaller projects that are going into an area and trying to redevelop an area that does not today have essentially a stormwater system. So the ratification bill, as before today, would include a provision that allows the 45% to be applied to a redevelopment project even where it is in an impaired water body. And we believe that will still offer an overall improvement to water quality from the stormwater discharges.
Very good. Seeing that that Vice Chair Magger did all the heavy work for me while I was gone and handled all the questions, I see there are no amendments. There is public testimony on the bill. First, I have Adam Bassford, Associated Industries of Florida. You are recognized.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Adam Bassford with Associated Industries of Florida. First of all, I want to say thank you to DEP. We've had several conversations over the last year or so about the rule and some concerns that our membership had in general. And I think we just discussed several of those things that have been addressed, dealing with the grandfathering provisions, dealing with some of the treatments to work on redevelopment areas, as well as ensuring that certain ag activities don't require additional inspections outside of those inspections that are currently undergone. So we really appreciate working on those things and the feedback and being able to work through some tweaks there. We have one issue that we'd really like to address as well, and that has a little bit to do with, you've already discussed some, dealing with the permit process and adding in some certainty and reliability into that process as well. Obviously, when we go into this having a specific study each time that a permit is gone, obviously, we believe the intention is to get those things out quickly and move the progress and move things forward quickly. However, there's no certainty around those guidelines as they are right now, and we'd love to see ways to put parameters around those things to just ensure that when a permit is applied for, that things aren't delayed overly, and we need to make sure that business is not slowed down by the regulatory process as much as possible. Again, we really appreciate being able to have those conversations and work through that. We've got some ideas that we'd love to follow up with many of you on and also with you, and so we'll be doing that in the coming days. But again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jeff Scala, Florida Association of Counties, waves in support. Elizabeth Alvey, Audubon of Florida, is a proponent and wishes to appear. You are recognized.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Beth Alvey. I'm the Senior Director of Policy with Audubon Florida, and I thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts on this important piece of legislation in front of us today. Florida stormwater rules formulated over 40 years ago positioned Florida as a leader in stormwater management in the country. However, with significant population growth and unprecedented development in our state, it is evident that these rules are no longer adequately protective. Addressing pollution control is challenging, and it is apparent that we are failing short of the goals we have set in our BMAPs and our restoration plans. As we look for solutions, we must prioritize measures that prevent nitrogen and phosphorus from entering the stormwater in the first place. This is more cost-effective and beneficial than attempting to remediate pollution after it has adversely affected our water bodies. The Stormwater Technical Committee comprised experts from diverse stakeholder groups, dedicated considerable time to discussing key concepts and arriving at this new rule. DEP considered their recommendations and proposed changes. And these rules that you see in front of you today are a compromise, as is evidenced by the back and forth and the conversation we've heard today. They address only a subset of the committee's suggestions, aiming to avoid undue burden on the regulated community. And despite being less protective than the TAC's original proposals, the rule on the table is worth supporting. It is an improvement over what we have in place today. The updated stormwater rule does mandate higher levels of treatment with each approved permit. However, and this is really important, it introduces more avenues for compliance through innovative approaches such as green infrastructure, low-impact development to meet the prescribed design criteria. These options actually provide so many more ecosystem benefits to us, and they're worth noting. Continuing with our outdated stormwater rules will have tangible environmental repercussions on Florida's economic well-being and our property values. The financial burden of restoration to rectify these harms is substantial. And for that, we ask for your support of this bill today. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin Coyne, Florida Stormwater Association. I should have gotten that really fast, shouldn't I? Florida Stormwater Association. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, other members here. There are two FSAs. There's the Florida Society of Anesthesiologists outside. I'm here for the stormwater. I don't think we have a lot of anesthesiologists in our group. But thank you again for hearing me today and also hearing this bill today. It's very important, as you can imagine, for the Stormwater Association to hear this. It's a group of over 330 organizations, 5,000 members statewide from the Panhandle all the way down to the Keys. Every one of our members has been dealing with this, looking at this, reviewing this. It is a very important to move this policy forward in our terms. That's why we're here to support this moving forward. We've FSA, the Stormwater Association FSA, not the other, the doctors, has been part of the TAC, has been providing comments to DEP, has been with this process all along. We also realize this is a compromise. There's a balance, there's a give and take as you move through this. So thank you for that. Again, that's why we're supporting today. We also realize it is going to be expensive. There is no doubt. But legislature has addressed things like wastewater, septic tanks. All these things cost a lot of money. It costs an amazing amount of money to clean up water. Moving policy forward now will help us maybe bring that number down a little bit. Thank you again, and again, we support this and all the best moving forward.
Thank you. Rebecca O'Hara, Florida League of Cities, is waving in support. Thank you, Ms. O'Hara. Brett Tubbs, Florida DEP, you're just information only. Waves in support. Florida DEP, Legislative Affairs Director, waving in support. Thank you very much. All right. That is it for members. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep, for bringing the bill. My district has been involved in stormwater treatment and management for well over a decade, and I think we do a pretty good job. I did want to say this. I spent my Christmas holidays and up to New Year's in the country of Ghana, and in the wonder and amazement of the country itself, I couldn't help wondering, looking at their infrastructure and the way they dispose of water, how much they needed stormwater treatment and drainage. I can see the effects of what's happening in Florida and how well it's handling. I mean, I'm on vacation and holiday, and I'm looking at what the disposal of their water is doing to their infrastructure, their land, and their roads, and thinking, boy, do they need a stormwater system. I think Florida is well underway, and the more we can do to improve it, the better our land is going to be, our infrastructure is going to be saved and maintained, and I got to see this firsthand. I thought I would share that with you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Serving the legislature, your vacations will never be the same. You'll be looking at that forever. Representative Maggard, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing the bill up, and thank you for presenting this. I think my stance was, based on my question, I still have two issues, three, on, it's like my last final question, on the cost to our consumers and time. Those are not in the favor of for our citizens today, whoever that may be, from developers to small businesses, whoever it is. I think the other thing concerns me, I wish it was a little stronger on how to maintain the stormwater. We've had those conversations before in the past. It's okay to build them, but if they're not maintained, they're not going to work. And I think there has to be something with these associations stronger to have them put it together, put it in place, whatever we want to call it, that they have to maintain these. Because 5 years down the road, they grow up, they're not maintained, they're not doing what their job is. But I still, as this bill goes forward, I still would like to understand the true cost. Unfortunately, as government is, the estimate at $2,600, doubtful that will be that. It's always higher, and that's the concern I have. But I'm going to support the bill because extremely important the stormwater is for this state, part of the puzzle. It took a long time to get here, and it's going to take a long time to get us out, unfortunately. It's going to take a lot of money. But this is the first step, so thank you.
thank you, Representative Maggard. I see no other debate. I sat in when the TMDLs were being set for the Lower St. John's, which is counterintuitively in the north, which most of us want to say up, but it's lower. And I know my development area not only had less wetlands, my home and my large community, which is the size of many small, modest-sized cities, was considered neutral in its contribution to the daily load. However, since then, protection of wetlands has improved, and that's a good thing. And I was stunned when I found out that it's 40 or 45% is the current level of nutrient reduction in our current stormwater system. That means for the last 30 years we've known this, we have continued to add to the overall burden. I mean, this is only the new development's impact. And I'm a big fan of that first rule of holes: when you find you're in a hole, stop digging. And this definitely improves that. I would not be surprised if this bill, in fact, has less cost impact because it's going to unleash other options and encourages innovative approaches that reduces nutrient loading. And I know that when the private sector has the constraints off, that they can come up with some very good solutions. Low-impact development isn't currently being rewarded. Many things that I've read about that I think are very positive and contribute to, you know, the quality of life and livability of our communities, as Chair Altman and I have discussed, are going to be beneficial, more beneficial than just having a bigger, deeper retention pond. And I think that's when we look at the past mitigation approaches, we're allowing other mitigation approaches that may have very modest cost impacts and have better results for our natural resources. I am very grateful that this rule regulation is here, finally here, and I really look forward to supporting it and hope that you all will feel this is a big accomplishment to get this bill through, and I appreciate the work that's gone into and very cost-conscious and considering the permitting process and the practical considerations. And I know that you maybe continue to work on some of the issues, but I am really grateful to see this bill here today, and I look forward to supporting your bill. Thank you for being the sponsor for this movement. Thank you. That, Representative Altman, you are recognized to close on PCB WST24-01.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for your leadership. I want to thank this committee. I want to thank the DEP and our House leadership and the governor for making such a great commitment and for Florida's future. But if I were to leave one message, I'd like to say this. Stormwater can be our friend. Stormwater can be a good thing, because when we provide adequate stormwater in our communities, we're providing flood protection, we're providing recreational assets, we're providing open space. I know in the community that my daughter, son-in-law, my granddaughter lives in, when we take walks, walk our dog, their pathways are designed around their stormwater systems. And walk around the lakes, and some of those stormwater systems, they've include some native vegetation, some hammock, where there's a bald eagle, a great horned owl. My 1-year-old granddaughter can already do owl noises. She can hoot like an owl at one. Those are quality of life things, as well as the fishing. I could go on and on about what we get back for investing in stormwater systems and treatment. It's not just nutrient reduction. That's important, keeps our water bodies clean. But we get back infrastructure. And when you look at it that way, it's really not costing us anything. There's a return on our investment. And I tell you, if we don't make that investment, the loss will be a heck of a lot more than what it costs us to provide these needed infrastructure improvements. I think Guyana example is a beautiful example. So this is an investment. This is not a bad thing. This is a good thing. And this will improve not only quality of our water, but will also improve the quality of life for all Floridians in all types of neighborhoods and communities. The innovative designs that can be implemented, this is a wonderful planning tool that we're passing here today. It's historic, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you. Representative Altman, having closed on his bill, Missy, will you please call the roll?
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Kasabi? Yes. Brackett?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman? Hart?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yep.
Redondo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yeager?
Yes.
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
16.
Members, by your support, will see, find, I write. My goodness, it's what happens when you miss part of a meeting. Members, by your support, will find WST24-01, Stormwater Rules, presented by Representative Altman, actually PCB WST24-01, reported favorably. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Well, members, that was one of the biggest things. People have tried for decades to get that done, so that's probably one of the biggest things you'll vote on this year. So congratulations on that. I would like to ask, this is our final meeting, and I would like to recognize our ranking member to see if she has any comments for our final meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank all of my Dems, Representative Walden, Representative Cross, Representative Dunkley, Rep. Henson, Representative Cassell, and then I was like, there's six of us, then that would make me. But I can tell you that when I came to this committee, all I knew about water was how to drink it and take a bath in it. I had no in-depth knowledge of, I mean, I know water is critically important, so don't misunderstand me, but having a team like you all to assist me and help me better understand exactly how critically important everything revolves around our water. We cannot get any more. We cannot make it. But what we can do is protect it. So being on this committee has really taught me a lot. And thank you, Chairwoman Stevens, for the meetings that we've had and the conversations that surround water and its quality. Because that's what we've got to give to our constituents. It's got to be quality. So I just want to thank all of you all that I've learned so much from as it relates to water. I'm really sorry that this is our last meeting. I thought maybe I'd get a little bit more water knowledge, but I'm grateful for what I have learned, and I look forward to sitting on this committee again next year. So thank you all, team, for what you all have done to assist me in becoming a better, more knowledgeable person of water and its and our crisis.
Thank you. Ranking Member Hart, you've been a great partner. Vice Chair Maggard, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I first want to thank Speaker Renner for putting this committee together. I think it's important. I think it sends a sign to Floridians that water is important to the state. And I think what we are starting here is just the tip of the iceberg of how we're going to solve the water problems of the future as this great state continues to grow and keep our natural resources. And how do we balance that? And I think this will be a my vision will this will be a major committee at some point. Because water will always be in the top three. Thank you, Chairwoman, for your leading this, the inaugural committee for this, and I want to thank all the committee members for their support of me when I was chair a couple of times and your thoughtfulness. Other than that, thank you very much.
Thank you, and I would echo the appreciation for Speaker Renner for the vision and to have this time, the luxury of this time to explore deeply the complex issues of water and the state, how important it is for the state of Florida. It is life, it is health, it is economy, and it's all those things together, so important. And it really, there's so many moving parts. And so I just hope that you will take with you as you go forward in your service, just how much there is to delve in. You can't just change one thing in this without causing impacts to other things, and it is extremely complex. I have enjoyed it immensely. I've worked in water before. It's been a great privilege to take a dive here, and I know that I could spend three more years taking those kind of dives and still be learning more. You know, we have spent a lot of money, and it's nice to hear people going, I can see it, things are getting better, and that's a good thing. And just remember that it's really exciting to clip the ribbon on a fire station or a library or, you know, even a new road. But it's all, the water is long-term, and it doesn't turn on a dime. It didn't get this way overnight, and it's going to take years of consistent funding and commitment. And that's one of the things Speaker Renner really wanted to get across. We've had bills moving this year that will address the dashboard and making it more available to when people look to see how water quality is going and what's going on in their area. That's really important. And many of you have spoken to me about important issues in your community. Keep working on them. You just keep chipping away, and we will leave Florida a better place for all of our children and our children's children, and that's the goal. With that, let's see, who can we say? My goodness. Representative Dunkley moves we rise, and with that we are adjourned. Thank you.